Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by Annie. And when Annie reached out to me, I was really touched because the way we become parents can go down so many different unexpected paths. And often it feels very isolating and alone. And I have always said that I value and respect and am so honored when anyone wants to share any story with me whatsoever around their journey of trying to conceive or whatever it looks like to become a parent. So Annie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you very much. So why don't you start by talking a bit about that decision that you, when you were ready to embark down this path of trying to conceive?
Sure. Great question. So just like most women, you know, you think, okay, I'm just going to go off the pill and pull that goalie and, you know, everything's going to be just fine. And I think you certainly talk with your significant other about, you know, how many children do we want to have? And are we in alignment there? But you don't always talk about what happens when we can't have children naturally, or, you know, what does that look like and how far are we willing to go? And so I just, you know, went off the pill about 6 years ago, and it was quite a wake up call when that happened, because I just didn't get a period. It just never happened. And so, you know, 45, 60 days go by. I'm calling my doctor saying, hey, is this normal that I'm like,
how old? Yeah. How old were you when you started, when you got on the pill?
I was on the pill when I was about 16 because my acne was so horrendous and my hormones were so out of whack. I'm sure this story is familiar to a lot of women. You know, they just throw you on the pill and here's a little Accutane and up, instead of really talking about, okay, well, this isn't normal acne. We're not talking about a couple of hormonal pimples. We're talking about like ravaging, cystic, scarring acne. And looking back, it sort of all makes sense that I would have sort of endocrine disorder. So, you know, to think that I could just come off the pill and everything would be hunky-dory. Well, I never had regular periods. I always had horrible acne. I always had all these symptoms of endocrine disorder problems. And
but no one ever talked to you about that. And then you were on the pill for so long. How old were you when you decided you wanted to start trying, if I can ask, a lady her age?
Yeah, so this was about 6 years ago. So I'm 35 now. So it was about 28, 29. And, you know, I was like, well, you know what, let's get off the pill and, you know, see what happens. You know, see what's going on with my body and all of that. Well, you know, my body just went completely haywire.
Wow.
So it was quite a, you know, journey just to even get a diagnosis. It was a number of months. I gained a lot of weight very quickly. Acne flared up again and I had horrible cystic acne again. My hair was falling out. It was just a hot mess. I was a hot mess, girl.
Oh, Annie.
I was finally diagnosed with PCOS.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of women are like, okay.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, this is becoming more and more common.
And that's polycystic ovarian syndrome for anyone who doesn't know what PCOS is. We've talked about it a lot on the show. So
yes, you do. You do. But I thank you for clarifying. Absolutely. And what's interesting about PCOS is it's a syndrome, right? So that means it can vary wildly from person to person.
Yeah.
And we don't have, you know, really locked down. There's some amazing research out there, but we really don't know what causes it. We think there's new research that's just come out that suggests genetic links in a little bit more tangibly. We kind of knew that it ran in families, but we didn't know what caused it. And now we're starting to see genetic links. Because it's a syndrome and not like truly a disease, we don't have sort of pinpointed what it looks like because it varies so wildly. So that's why it's hard to get a diagnosis and why it goes a number of years sometimes, just like an autoimmune disorder, it goes a number of years because it's kind of ambiguous.
And it sounds like with your body, because you had been on birth control for so long, the symptoms came on like a tidal wave when you got off of,
It did.
And
it
weight
was
gain and hair loss and fertility struggles, that goes hand in hand with PCOS.
Absolutely. And so it turns out that I don't ovulate at all on my own.
Wow.
It completely, like sometimes women with PCOS will ovulate every once in a while, or sometimes they'll even ovulate normally. But yeah, I absolutely don't ovulate at all. And I did about 6 rounds of oral medication with Clomid and Femara to try to jumpstart those ovaries, but nothing was happening. I had a lot of monitoring and we just couldn't get my ovaries to do anything other than make cysts. So that's another misnomer, is sometimes people assume that if you have cystic ovaries, it means you have polycystic ovarian syndrome, and it is actually very different. The polycystic ovarian syndrome is a true syndrome that has multiple different, you know, symptoms and problems that's different than just having cysts on your ovaries. The PCOS cysts are also very typical, where they sort of create a string of pearls in your ovary. And what happens is a bunch of failure to launches of your ovums. So your poor little ovary tries to release those ovums, and instead it sort of gets stuck, don't get enough luteinizing hormone for it to actually release. And so you end up with a bunch of little cysts where the ovums tried to release themselves. So you can see it on an ultrasound very clearly, and that's one of the diagnostic factors for PCOS. And even with multiple rounds of medication, we couldn't get it to go. Wow. So we knew that I would need injections in order to even be able to ovulate and have a chance for a baby.
At this point, did you feel that care providers were being supportive because you were, you know, having these struggles, but also plus size?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think my original OBGYN definitely took pity because he had sort of watched me gain weight so quickly and, you know, knew that I had always struggled with weight since I was, you know, in second grade. And those hormones are coursing through your body. I didn't know back then that that probably had something to do with the PCOS, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is something I've fought my whole life. But, you know, after having lost a lot of weight, gained it back so quickly after coming off of the pill. So, you know, yeah, he kind of had some sympathy for me, I think, in a different way. But I will tell you that my first endocrinologist, my first specialist that I went to, basically looked at my chart, looked at me, told me that I, you know, needed to basically lose weight in order for him to treat me. And that I had to come back in 3 months having proven to him that I've lost weight so that I could show him that I knew how to eat.
So you could show him that you knew how to eat? Excuse me? Oh my goodness.
We talked about diet. Now, PCOS and diet do have a link. So I am a big proponent of eating healthily and eating well and all of those good things.
Right. But PCOS also makes it hard to lose weight.
Absolutely. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry. I'm all fired up.
So of course he's like, okay, no flour, no sugar, no processed meat, no dairy, all of these no's, right? Okay, I can do that. But what he didn't know is that I also went down to like about 1,000 calories a day so that I could lose weight. So that I could show him that I was serious and I meant business in order for him to treat me.
Let's pause there for a minute and unravel that, because that is so common. And that happens to so many people, that they feel like all this pressure from their care providers. They're told all these things not to do, but they're not told all these things to do. And so then we make dramatic choices, which actually, doing radical things like that to our body, only thriving off of 1,000 calories a day, impacts your physical well-being, your mental health, and it impacts fertility because you're not nourishing your body.
That acute weight loss actually reduces fertilization rates instead of improving the odds.
Yeah.
So, you know, be healthy, eat well.
Yes. There's a difference between working with a nutritionist, doing intuitive eating, eating what your body needs, being physically active, doing all those things, making choices that fuel your body in a wonderful ways. There's a huge difference between that and very dangerous restriction and binging and all of those things that really, and that I get so sorry, soapbox came out for a second.
No,
but
please, I'm with you. Absolutely.
Yeah, I get so frustrated when these care providers are actually really causing harm. And but they look at a person of size and that whole like you have to prove to me thing. Oh, like, and they're not supported. Like, this is not how we're going to create good outcomes. All right, back to your story.
Agreed. No, absolutely. And, you know, side note on nutrition, you know, for those of you that might be listening that have PCOS, absolutely work with a nutritionist. I happen to get in contact with a very friendly, wonderful nutritionist who was like, no girl, like 1800 calories, 2000 calories. Yeah. Like that's what's going to be maintaining if you're eating the right things, and less about losing weight and more about eating the right food that's going to prepare your body for pregnancy. And, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners can attest to eating far more healthily than many of our skinny counterparts, mm-hmm. right? And that doesn't mean that we're better than or anything like
that. No, yeah, we know all the things.
We know all the things. Now, granted, like, I love me some pasta, okay?
Well,
but
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, girl can go chubby girl on some pasta. But, you know, it's all about, there's a level of control, too, that you feel like you have when you're eating really well. You're eating organically. You're eating all these great fats. You're eating all these good things. And that feels a lot better than completely denying yourself of, you know, and starving yourself in order to prove something to someone.
Did you stay with that endocrinologist and go back?
We didn't stay very long.
Good.
I stayed there for a few rounds of injections to try to, you know, ovulate. I did ovulate with injections, but he actually neglected to find another situation where I think I was a bit discriminated against. He neglected to find a tumor that was about the size of a guava on my right ovary.
What?
Even though he was in my...
I'm sorry, you said guava, not kumquat, right?
Yeah, no, a guava.
Oh my... What?
Yeah, even though I had ultrasounds almost every day, I think he just kind of phoned it in. Like, he wasn't really looking for anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's called a bias against people of size. I'm 100%. Really sorry.
He was just phoning it in. He was completely biased. And so he missed this tumor. And so when he did find it eventually, it was like, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go directly back to your OB/GYN. And I was in emergency surgery the next day because we didn't know if it was cancerous or not.
Yeah.
We didn't know what the situation was. It turned out to be benign. It was a dermoid tumor. I had it since birth and it just had probably continued to grow. So all the more reason why I was like, how come you've been in my business every day and you haven't found this huge thing, like clearing thing?
So I'm so fired up right now. Oh my goodness.
I never went back to that doctor.
Good.
And what's interesting is this doctor is very well respected with excellent results in California. So it's a shame, but you know, this wasn't like some like Costco doctor, you know, like this, not that Costco's bad. I mean, like discount doctor, you know, this is somebody that was very well respected, recommended by my OBGYN, and he just that flat out missed it. So when the surgery happened, my OBGYN knew so badly that I wanted to be a mother someday. And he, you know, spent 3.5 hours trying to save my right ovary. Oh, but when I came out, he was like, you know, there's a chance that it's never going to work properly. And it doesn't, we found out later, but did really, really try. Yeah. So I had emergency surgery and kind of put everything on pause after that for a while.
Yeah, I would think so. There's a lot of emotional stuff happening too.
Sure. And personal things and, you know, everything else. So everything was just kind of on hold after that. Found a new doctor, had some great experiences there, did 2 rounds of IUI that were not successful.
Can you share what IUI is for people who are listening who might not know? No, you're fine.
The reproductive world is full of acronyms, so feel free to tell me.
It is, yes.
Comes common vernacular. IUI is intrauterine insemination. So some people call it the turkey baster, where you basically... It's not as invasive as IVF, and it's frequently used as a frontline treatment before you go to IVF.
Yeah.
Still the same level of monitoring, and it also requires injectable medications to get you to ovulate, and you basically work on it with timing. So did 2 rounds of IUI, not successful. And then, you know, we found out years later that I have an autoimmune disorder that was deteriorating my thyroid.
Oh, wow.
We thought that might be causing some other immune problems that would need special attention if I were to get pregnant. Now, this second reproductive endocrinologist that I went to was far more size-friendly, for lack of a better word.
Thank goodness, you deserved a good provider after that guy. Oh, my gosh.
This guy, like, go home, sit down. But this, yeah, wonderful doctor, Orange County, California. And he did say to me, you know, hey, your BMI is high. Okay. So you have this condition and it needs to be managed.
Yeah.
Okay. When that happens, here are some risk factors. You just have to know. And not only that, but you know, you don't have as good of a chance on paper as somebody that weighs less. And you just have to know that.
And I think that's perfectly okay and great. And we should be having those conversations, but it's how those conversations take place that matter.
Exactly. It was with respect and dignity. It was matter of fact. It wasn't and you've mentioned this in previous podcasts before, you know, it wasn't, okay, you're fat and therefore you're going to have this problem. It's, hey, you have a slightly higher risk factor. Okay, so here's how we wanted to monitor that. Here's how we're going to manage that. And, you know, looking at the overall health of the patient, not overlooking things because they happen to be overweight, right?
So, good, yeah.
You know, that's what a huge, you know, paradigm shift, right? And what a huge shift from a patient standpoint to feel like, you know, hey, this person's in my corner and this person wants to try to make this baby happen too.
Yeah.
In any event, after a couple rounds there, again, I had some personal things, everything kind of was on hold, but he kind of was pointing to the fact that I would have to do IVF to have the best chances possible. So that, as you know, is a huge financial undertaking.
Massive.
It is emotional and it's far more invasive. So my husband and I moved out to North Carolina, as I mentioned, last October. And that is when we started our IVF journey.
And that's when the egg and sperm is fertilized and then inseminated and all kinds of medication and hormones. And yeah, it's a big procedure that comes with, as you said, not only a lot of financial implications, but emotional and physical ones too. It's a big decision.
Right. And so that's part of why I'm so glad to talk to you today, because I feel like if you're about to embark on that journey, you know, there are so many things that I wish that I had known before going into these, you know, very expensive and invasive and emotional procedures. So
share some of those with us, Annie.
Yeah. Well, we also found out that my husband was infertile in this process. So we needed, you know, special support to conceive our embryos. And we just really felt like the odds were stacked against us.
Yeah.
You know, so we're like, okay, we know I need IVF. We know that, you know, he needs special support. You know, how are we going to do this? But, you know, fortunately, my doctor here in North Carolina was super, you know, supportive. It was actually very difficult to find a doctor that would do IVF on me.
Will you share a little bit of that, of trying to find someone and what that experience was like?
Great question. So a lot of clinics will reject you when you're over a certain BMI. And the reason for that is twofold. Firstly, because fertility clinics are basically just as good as their statistics. So many of them use lots of different tactics to inflate those statistics so that they look better on national reports. If you have a higher BMI, you don't have as high of a chance as somebody with a normal BMI. That's an easy thing for clinics to be prejudiced about. Mm-hmm. Something interesting, put in your back pocket. It's actually about the same disparity between Asian women and white women. So, but of course, they can't discriminate based on race, nor should they, right?
Yeah.
But they can discriminate against you and refuse to treat somebody if you're fat.
Well, what's also interesting to me about fertility specialists is that they use the whole, well, you know, not only the outcomes with fertility treatments, but also increased risk during pregnancy. And my response to that is, but people who are above the age of 35, or as they call in the industry, geriatric, which, oh my gosh, major eye roll now, but
yeah.
Have about, you know, a lot of the same increased risks and some different ones during pregnancy, and yet they are marketed to, and fat people are turned away. So it's very, very frustrating.
It is frustrating. Amen. Absolutely. You know, it's important to remember that we have a huge lack of evidence about the effectiveness of IVF in anybody, because really, truly rigorous data gathering would require placebo treatment, which people don't want to do.
No. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can you? Oh no.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a huge gap as far as what is truthful and what isn't, as far as, you know, true statistics. And again, you know, you're not going to refuse to treat somebody based on race. That's ridiculous. But it is okay to refuse to treat somebody because of their status on a BMI scale that's outdated, but that's another show.
So when you were searching, did you look on their website to see if they had BMI restrictions or call?
I got to the point where I would just be upfront and be like, listen, I'm 5'5", I'm 300 pounds. Will you treat me? Nope. Thank you. Next.
Wow.
You know, finally, and of course you want to go to a place that has good results. And I fortunately only had to call two or three places before I found the clinic that I ultimately went with.
But good for you, instead of making that appointment and sitting there and spending the money before finding out that you'd be turned away.
Right. You know, it's just, thank you. But it's unfortunate that we have to do that. But yeah, if you're listening, call first, be honest about how much you weigh and say, will you treat me? The other reason some clinics will turn people away is because the egg retrieval requires anesthesia. You know, you're supposed to go under for the procedure because it's incredibly invasive and painful. Not to get, I don't know if this is too much detail, but basically they puncture holes through the walls of your vaginal canal and then use an aspirator to aspirate the eggs from your ovaries. So you can imagine how uncomfortable that is. And so you're supposed to actually go under for that procedure.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's not TMI. I'm fascinated by it.
I don't know. We start talking about vaginas. Like, I don't know how.
We can talk about all the vaginas on vulvas and all that good stuff on this show because it's our bodies and we should be talking about them.
I think it's great. But yeah, and I think all this science is magical. But, you know, you let me know. So you're supposed to go under. And a lot of clinics won't put people fully under that are, you know, heavier, you know, because it is more dangerous to put people under that carry their weight a certain way in a non-hospital setting, because we're talking about a clinic setting. We're not talking about a hospital setting. You know, this is, they don't have the capability to intubate somebody if necessary. So you were talking about, you know, what are some things you wish you knew? The first one is know that some clinics will refuse to treat you. So before you go and make those appointments, call ahead. Secondly is consult with, you know, a clinic that you choose. Before you start any injections or anything, consult with the anesthesiologist about what your options are. It shouldn't just be binary. Well, you're fat, so we don't do it.
Yeah.
You don't get anything and you kind of deserve it.
Ugh.
Or we refuse to treat. So what happened to me was I did not consult with the anesthesiologist. I was told by my doctor that they would totally help me and that they weren't ones to crush anybody's dreams and that they would totally support. And they see a lot of women that have my condition, you know, have successful pregnancies and beautiful babies and yada, yada. Well, here I am. I'm full of ovaries. I'm all pumped up with hormones. I'm full of ovaries. I'm full of eggs in my ovaries. I'm all pumped up with hormones. I'm going through the process. And the day before my retrieval, my first retrieval, I am called by the anesthesiologist to tell me that they refused to put me under for the procedure.
Oh, gosh.
Are you cringing, Annie?
That roller coaster you've been on for so long. And then you think,
road, girl.
Yeah.
So he calls me the day before. Well, what am I supposed to do at that point? I'm full of eggs. I've spent a ton of money. So I went through the procedure without going under.
Oh my goodness.
And it was barbaric and traumatic. And all he gave me was like a little mask of laughing gas.
What?
But I remember every second of this.
I'm sorry. You can get more at the dentist at 500 pounds than you can when you, what?
I think truly it was just kind of like, well, if you're fat, you don't get anything. Like that was kind of the attitude. Does that make sense? And yeah, you kind of deserve it. Like it was barbaric. So
I'm sorry. You went through that with nitrous and that was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And like, I wish I had a leather strap or something, like anything. It was incredibly traumatic and I'd say barbaric.
Yeah, no, barbaric is the right word that you use.
I'm not saying this to scare women into not going through with assisted reproduction because there have been many highs throughout this journey as well. And I'm just saying this so that anybody listening is educated as to what to look for and what to ask for. Say, okay, how are you going to make me comfortable in the procedure? There's ways that they can, to your point, when you go to the dentist, they're going to make it a little more comfortable for you, right? So what is available to me?
So Annie, would you then recommend, as you did with the phone calls beforehand to find out if there were BMI restrictions, before you even started going down to IVF to have a consult with an anesthesiologist and maybe even get them to sign off on the fact that they will, you know, put you under for egg retrieval?
I think there's so many options available and they're not just black and white. So I understand the risk of truly going under. However, I think there are ways to make people more comfortable. So I'll give you an example. My second egg retrieval, I knew what I was getting myself into. And, you know, at this point you just kind of do whatever you need to do to like make this happen. I went through a second round and I was ready to just like bite down and grin and bear it. And the doctor couldn't even get in there because I was so traumatized and scared. So he turned to the anesthesiologist, who was a different person than the first person that worked on me, and was like, what can we give her? I can't even get in there right now.
Wow.
And they gave me something where I still remember the procedure, but but I had almost no pain and very little recollection. So I wasn't completely under, but I was.
It's like Twilight that you can get at a dentist for like a wisdom tooth removal. I don't know if that's exactly what they did, but it sounds like Twilight
type. Yeah. And I'm not an anesthesiologist and I'm not going to pretend to know all of the risks, but I do know that it's not just black and white. And if I could do it all over again, I would say, okay, we know I can't go completely under like a 120 pound person. All right. But what are the options that are available to me so that it's not the day before my retrieval and I'm being told, oh, surprise, like you're not getting anything tomorrow.
And I will say it's really care provider specific because we have heard from people. We even had a IVF story on the show and I'm pretty sure she was about the same weight, if not even a little heavier, and she was able to get the general. So asking those questions beforehand. But you're right. I can't imagine going through all this emotional work, all this physical work, all this financial work, and then to be told the day before for the first IVF procedure that we're not going to give you anything. And then, you would just consent. At that point, you're like, just do whatever it takes. But that's not right.
I don't want to give birth on my living room floor either. But at that point, like, what are you supposed to do? Like, the eggs have to come out. Like, it's kind of the same thing. Like, the baby's got to come out. The eggs have to come out. What are you going to do? So, again, if I were to do it all again, I'm not saying this to scare anybody, but talk to the clinic's anesthesiologist.
Yes.
Get somebody that will make you comfortable throughout the procedure.
Yes.
And that you deserve it. You deserve the extra care that might go into it. You know, yes, there are risks. I'm not saying there aren't. However, be an advocate for yourself in that so you don't end up in that situation. Some other things when we're talking about procedures, ask for wider stirrups. Ask for, things like, I had to have a couple uterine biopsies that are not pleasant, where they basically scratch the inside of your uterus. Just get that procedure going so that they can visualize your cervix and, be able to thread the catheter through. That can be difficult when you're full figured. So, instead of just making you uncomfortable and digging in there, how about if I lift my legs up? Or do you have wider stirrups? Or, what can I do? So, being an advocate for yourself in those kinds of things so that it's a more comfortable procedure and that, you don't feel humiliated in the moment.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if our healthcare providers always think of the comfort of, somebody that is a bigger person.
Yeah, it's all the things, the self-advocacy things we talk about a lot on the show, from making sure they're using the correct size blood pressure cuff to, what are your options around being weighed? I mean, there's so many ways that we can advocate for ourselves, but especially in those situations where we are vulnerable and exposed, do they have, a gown, if you need to wear one, that will fit your body and help you feel some level of dignity and security. Right. All of those things matter and they play a role. I mean, my God, you went through trauma. I can't even imagine the stress level that your body was to go through. And then they wanted you to fertilize an egg after being through a barbaric experience. Like, what? Oh my gosh. And it sounds like it didn't work, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
It didn't take.
So, we also learned in the first round, here's another little piece of information for anybody that's full figured going through IVF. We did figure out in the first round, I have chubby arms. Like, I'm a chubby girl. Like, especially with PCOS, I carry a lot of my weight in the top half of my body. And, I needed a longer needle to get the hormones to where they needed to be. So, when I was doing injections in my arms, at first my hormone levels weren't up to where they needed to be. And I will say my doctor did a great job here before just upping the dose. He was like, what if we use a longer needle?
Oh, good to know.
Quarter inch on the needle. Yeah. My arms are definitely a quarter inch bigger than a 120 pound person, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, that's not going to make me feel badly. Let's just make sure we're getting the medicine where it needs to go. That took some trial and error. So things like that, where it's like, okay, use the longer needle, ask for it. You ask for the wider stirrups, ask for the, the anesthesia that's going to work for your body. Things like that. That would be my suggestion to somebody going through it.
Oh, this is so valuable. And I know that, you're sharing all of these gems and wisdom and tips, and then also sharing the trauma that you went through. And so I just appreciate your willingness to be so open.
Oh, my pleasure.
Share.
Well, thanks for listening and being willing to chat about it. We did do two transfers and So we did two rounds of egg retrievals. They were incredibly difficult, but we were thrilled because we got four normal embryos. What I mean by normal is we have them tested from a chromosomal standpoint and they are normal. So we had three girls and a boy. We did two transfers and unfortunately we were totally heartbroken, but both of them did end in miscarriage. But the good news is that we have two left. And so we have four chances at a pregnancy. Another situation where it was definitely, there was some prejudice on the side of my healthcare provider was my first doctor in North Carolina actually passed away, which I was devastated.
Oh no.
And so I was given to the other doctor of the practice who's very well respected and, you know, certainly competent and not unkind, but he didn't even read my chart. He comes in and he says, after my first miscarriage, and he says, well, you know, you might want to consider weight loss surgery.
Right. We'll put you under. Sorry. Soapbox came out again. We'll put you under for weight loss surgery, but we won't put you under for egg retrieval.
I'm not saying anything bad about weight loss surgery. That is a personal journey for many women that has given them a different quality of life that, you know, it's been wonderful, but it's not a panacea. It's not a heal all. So I know a lot of women that have also struggled very much and still have same health problems that they had before they had weight loss surgery. You know, it's a journey in and of itself.
Oh yeah.
It's not just something that, you know, as a band-aid to fix everything. And, he comes in and he's like, you know, I suggest weight loss surgery. I've had some situations where, you know, women get pregnant on their own after weight loss surgery. And I'm like, did you read my chart? Because my husband's infertile. you know, so
well, not only that, you're getting older too, right? Yes. So you've been through this journey for a number of years.
Age trumps everything. So basically the time that it might take you to lose weight is, you know, when you're older, that's way more significant than any potential benefit in terms of weight loss. That is scientifically documented. So, you know, don't be shamed into that being a cure for everything is kind of what I'm getting at. And the fact that he didn't even read my chart was just like, oh, you're fat. I bet weight loss surgery would fix everything. And that's also not what you want to hear when you've just had a miscarriage, is that it's
your
you're fat.
Oh my gosh. Annie, I just want to like crawl through the phone. I want to crawl through the mic and give you a big hug.
Oh, thank you.
Gosh.
So with the second miscarriage, we talked a little bit more about my autoimmune disorder. And we think that that's actually what, after, you know, all of this, that's actually what's keeping me from being able to actually maintain a pregnancy, because we have quality embryos that are genetically sound. So at this point where we stand right now is we have two embryos left, and out of the, you know, utmost respect for their, you know, potential at life, we are going to actually go a surrogacy route for a chance. I'm one of our children.
That's wonderful. I can only imagine how hard it has been to come to that place of accepting that that is the path that you want to take to become a mother. And you've gone through so much and you've done literally everything that you could do. And I just,
I think that's amazing. You know, mother's love, right?
Yeah.
I actually don't have a baby in my arms. Doesn't mean that I don't still have the love for my potential child and for them. So, you know,
you would do more than anything.
You know, so it's heartbreaking on some level to know that, you know, I'm never going to carry my own baby and have my own children, a child, and, you know, be able to experience that pregnancy. But, you know, we've determined with our doctor that that's really the best route in order to, you know, I have some form of lupus or something. It's also sort of an enigma that I'm waiting to sort of get a diagnosis on. We know that it deteriorates my thyroid. And so we just want to give them the very best chance we possibly can. So that's where we are currently. But, you know, I just hope that anybody going through assisted reproduction knows that they matter and that, you know, it's important to advocate for yourself. And to your point, you know, get the right blood pressure cuff and know that just because you're fat doesn't mean you are doomed to have a horrible pregnancy or a horrible time trying to conceive. That's not the case, but scientifically that's not the case. So,
and like you shared, there's so many other things happening to you personally and your own health that unfortunately you were put on birth control at such a young age that there was no way to really support you and to understand and to get different diagnostics. And so I think it's really important conversation for all of us here, especially moms of daughters
who we might
be passing this along to them. And that, you know, I think now doctors are less pushing birth control, or maybe I don't know, but I feel like a little bit less. But I think, you know, if you're not finding the answers and you're having struggles, to maybe also look into a naturopath or look into some other alternative medicine if you're struggling with different aspects of your health, because naturopaths also have a lot of knowledge in nutrition as well. And there are different foods that can really help.
I'm full hippie. As soon as I found out that I had this endocrine disorder, I mean, I believe in modern science, but I'm also all about like natural homeopathic and, you know, ways to, you know, treat things. And so I'm a firm believer in that. And I think we do need to look out for the young women in our world that are, you know, coming up the ranks here and coming of age. And, you know, if we have a chubby young woman and that has acne, like maybe it's not just because she's sloppy and messy or likes to eat. Maybe it's because she has a hormone disorder. You know, so quickly we put, you know, people in categories and boxes based on our own prejudices and things like that. So I think it's important to say, oh, it's not just teenage acne. It's not just teenage oily hair. It's not just teenage weight gain. It's maybe a piece of a bigger puzzle. And the best gift that you can give a young woman that has PCOS is the gift of time. Because if I had known that I had PCOS back in my teens, you know, everything could have been a lot easier for me from a fertility standpoint. So certainly need to look out for the young women coming up the ranks here as they come of age and know what to look for and get help.
That was so beautiful what you said about the gift of time to our kids, but I think also to ourselves. But it's hard when you are getting older and you're struggling with fertility, because the gift of time can also be a burden. And that time closes quicker than we'd ever imagine. But there are so many different ways to become a parent. And it doesn't make you, Annie, or anyone else listening less than because you went a different route. It actually, in my opinion, makes you stronger and so incredible. And yeah, and to our adoptive 100%. Moms too, like you are amazing. And we need to value different journeys.
100%. And I mean, that's something else, not to go down a total rabbit hole. And I know, you know, we want to be respectful of time here, but you know, just because you even don't have children doesn't mean you don't know how to love.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Or doesn't mean you don't know, haven't, you know, created life in a different way or, you know, experienced the same kind of love, you know. And not only that, but it's not always easy to just say, oh, just adopt, or, you know, oh, go this route or go that route. You know, all of those things come with their own costs, both financially and emotionally. So, you know, I think it's important to be respectful of everybody's path, regardless of what that might be. And even if that ultimately means that, you know, you don't have children at all. Or I have some friends that are dealing with secondary infertility now that I'm in my mid-30s and, you know, they've had one beautiful child. And it's easy for somebody like me to look and say, well, you have one baby. why are we stressing out about number two? But it's just as important for somebody that believes that there's somebody else in their family, you know, that is destined to be. I think we just need to have some grace with, you know, everybody, regardless of what that path looks like.
Yes. Yes. I would clap right now if it wouldn't sound weird. But yeah, I mean, that was beautiful. And I think a beautiful way to wrap up this journey and to because we ultimately wanted to share this conversation to say exactly what you said at the end, that regardless of what the journey is, and even if it doesn't end up in parenthood, like you matter and you are incredible and you are just as valuable as everyone else. And if you are struggling with fertility, you are not alone. You are not alone.
So you are not alone. And if you're fat and you're struggling through infertility, you're also not alone.
You are definitely not alone. You got a whole community here.
Exactly,
we are here for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. So thank you for the work you're doing to, you know, get the word out and all of that good stuff.
I'm just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today. Plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online about what it is like to have a plus size pregnancy. Over the past 7 years, as a certified childbirth educator, I've supported thousands of plus size people during pregnancy, and I've poured all the information I've gained into a guide that will support you. Get the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide today at plussizebirth.com. Be sure to enter coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off your guide. You can also get the audiobook version that I recorded just for you. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show. Oh, well, Annie, thank you for all that you shared. I learned new stuff too, just really great tips. And then I'm really wanting to make sure you write up about that doctor in California. Put some reviews out on the internet. I mean, I think that's something, if you come to that place, that we need to do too. When things happen that are wrong, clearly wrong, then whenever ways that feel right to speak up and protect other people, even if it's just like, hey, if you have a high BMI, stay the heck away from 100%. This guy.
I think so, right now, from a karmic place, I'm so just trying sorry. To, you know, be at peace and with forgiveness. But there may come a day where, you know, I write a review or two, and that, you know, is certainly to your point, to protect anybody that might come across that person in the future. So I think, you know, right now it's just about maintaining positivity as much as possible. And
I respect that.
Moving forward in a positive way, but I hear you and I completely understand what you're saying.
You can just whisper his name offline and then I'll write through. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing. I just get so mad when there's clearly been mistreatment, even above and beyond a bias. So I'm still holding on to everything that was happening to you, and it just breaks my heart and makes me angry, because these things shouldn't happen to us. And the words that are said to us when we are sitting sometimes half naked on a table and being stripped of our dignity are absolutely wrong.
Pregnancy, you know, assisted reproduction, I mean, all your girl parts are in the air, and, you know, it's very vulnerable. So how can we keep people as comfortable as possible? That does not include any comments or, you know, sometimes cloaked in wanting to care for you. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, and you gave some great tips around asking for the bigger stirrups and advocating for yourself. And those are all important takeaways that we can have regardless if you're on a fertility journey or not, just in our daily lives for whenever we go in for our well women visits and all of that good stuff. So,
I mean, hey, if you go to a spa, ask for a bigger robe. Like, what's keeping you from going and enjoying a massage like everybody else?
Or bring your own. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Do whatever it takes to have the experiences that you want to have. Absolutely.
I loved your advocacy at Dove with like the chairs, right? You know?
Oh, like, thank you.
Chair makes such a huge difference. And look what happened as a result when you advocate just for yourself. You sometimes end up changing something for a lot of people. So,
well, I know that all that you shared is going to change things for people too. So thank you, Annie, so incredibly much for being on the show. And I wish you all the best with these next steps with your surrogacy journey. And I hope you'll follow up and give us some updates too.
I would love to. And thank you, anybody who's listening, and you know, for sharing in my story with me. I appreciate it.
And then Annie, if people want to connect with you online, where can they find you?
Definitely. Feel free to request me on Instagram. My account is private, but you're welcome to request at Stellar Princess.
And I love you. Stellar Princess.
You just have to be a Stellar Princess.
Yes.
Say hello at Stellar Princess. And I do share a lot about my IVF journey and where we are on my Instagram. And just by the nature of it being personal, I do keep my profile private, but please feel free to reach out and I will happily add you so you can follow along and see what's going on.
Oh, thank you for sharing.
Of course.
All right. Well, bye friends.